Love at first sight. That's what Joe Goldberg believes he experiences when Guinevere Beck walks into his New York City bookstore. She browses the fiction section with careful grace, pays with a credit card that reveals her name, and smiles as she leaves. A perfectly ordinary encounter, except in Joe's mind, it's destiny. Within hours, he's found her on social media, located her apartment, and begun watching her through her perpetually uncurtained windows. Joe doesn't see himself as a stalker. He's a romantic, a protector, a man who understands Beck better than she understands herself. "You walk into the bookstore and you keep your hand on the door to make sure it doesn't slam," he narrates. "You smile, embarrassed to be a nice girl, and your nails are bare and your V-neck sweater is beige, and it's impossible to know if you're wearing a bra, but I don't think that you are." What makes this opening so chilling isn't just Joe's invasive observations, it's how familiar his thinking feels. Haven't we all Googled someone before a first date? Haven't we all constructed narratives about strangers based on fragments of information? Joe's behavior is an extreme version of commonplace curiosity, and that's what makes him so disturbing. He doesn't just cross boundaries, he doesn't believe they exist at all. In Joe's world, privacy is obsolete. Within a day of meeting Beck, he knows her Twitter handle, @TheUnrealBeck, family history, and apartment, all from her digital footprint. "Google you and there you are," Joe muses. "Beck with an undergraduate degree from Brown, where you wrote an essay about a lottery for people who want to live in brownstones." Beck's life is an open book. She tweets about writing struggles, therapy sessions, and hookups. With curtains perpetually open, her apartment becomes what Joe calls the perfect stage. As he watches her eat, sleep, and have sex with Benji, Joe doesn't see himself as an invader, merely accepting her invitation. "You" transcends being just a thriller. It mirrors our digital exhibitionism. Beck's oversharing makes her vulnerable, yet reflects our Instagram story culture. The novel poses a disturbing question. When we broadcast our lives, who might be watching? At the bookstore's heart lies Joe's darkest secret, a climate-controlled basement vault with mahogany beams and unbreakable acrylic walls. Originally for rare editions, this cage transforms into both literal prison and perfect metaphor for Joe's twisted worldview. "This magnificent cage is more chapel than prison," he reflects, sanctifying his disturbing behavior. Built when Joe was 15 under Mr. Mooney's supervision, the cage embodies formative trauma. After Joe left it unlocked, resulting in a stolen first edition, Mr. Mooney imprisoned him inside for days with minimal food. This punishment, coinciding with September 11, 2001, went unnoticed by Joe's neglectful father, cementing his belief that he could disappear without anyone caring. The cage becomes Joe's solution for anyone between him and Beck, first Benji, Beck's privileged lover, and later Beck herself. It physically manifests how Joe views love, not as mutual freedom, but as possession disguised as protection. Joe's pursuit of Beck involves removing obstacles, starting with Benji and Peach Salinger. Through these eliminations, he transforms jealousy into what he perceives as righteous violence, believing he's improving Beck's life by removing toxic influences. Joe despises Benji for his unearned privilege. During Benji's captivity, Joe tests his literary knowledge, exposing him as a fraud. This intellectual gatekeeping becomes Joe's justification for murder. He kills Benji by exploiting his peanut allergy, then rationalizes that Benji died educated. Peach presents a different threat as Beck's wealthy, possessive friend with romantic feelings for her. As J.D. Salinger's relative, she embodies the literary elite Joe both envies and resents. Joe attacks her in Central Park after discovering she secretly photographs Beck, and later kills her at her beach house, staging it as suicide. Most disturbing is how Joe positions himself as Beck's savior rather than stalker, framing his violence as love. When Joe and Beck begin dating, their relationship reveals the gap between fantasy and reality. Their early days seem perfect. They establish the rule of the robes, create private jokes, and make love constantly. Joe believes they've achieved what Beck calls an everything ship. Yet Joe's perception remains skewed. He finds profound meaning in trivial gestures like Beck using his toothbrush. When she becomes distant, responding slowly to messages, citing class commitments, his insecurity spirals, and he continues monitoring her communications, convinced of infidelity. Joe fails to recognize that Beck's withdrawal might naturally respond to his overwhelming intensity. When she discovers his box of Beck, stolen items including her underwear and old phone, she's horrified, calling him a sicko. Joe's confusion reveals the core problem. He sees Beck not as an autonomous person, but as an object to possess. The relationship collapses when Joe discovers Beck's affair with her therapist. Rather than accepting the end, he imprisons her, demanding confession, a final act exposing their relationship's lack of mutual respect. Learning Beck attends therapy twice weekly. Joe creates a Dan Fox persona to infiltrate Dr. Nikki's practice. Through stolen recordings, Joe discovers the therapist has inappropriate feelings for Beck, describing her as hypersexualized with boundary issues, while admitting to sexual fantasies about her. Joe learns Dr. Nikki remains in a loveless marriage for his teenage daughters. A disturbing parallel emerges between these men who abuse positions of trust, Dr. Nikki through professional misconduct and Joe through violence. The key difference? Dr. Nikki commits ethical violations while Joe's obsession leads to imprisonment and murder. This subplot showcases Joe's skill at appropriating psychological terminology to rationalize his behavior. He references concepts like the mouse in your house to justify stalking, creating an intellectual framework that makes his predatory actions seem calculated rather than pathological, revealing how abusers use language to normalize their disturbing behavior. The novel climaxes when Beck discovers Joe's true nature after finding her stolen possessions. Joe knocks her unconscious and imprisons her in the cage. They unexpectedly bond over the Da Vinci Code, giving Joe hope for reconciliation, especially when Beck criticizes her affair with Dr. Nikki. Their apparent reconnection leads to Beck seducing Joe through the cage drawer. He unlocks it for sex while leaving the door open, interpreting her failure to escape as commitment. The illusion shatters when Joe later finds Beck attempting to flee. She pleads for freedom, promising to disappear and never reveal what happened to Benji or Peach. When Joe refuses, she fights back, and he strangles her to death, stuffing torn pages from the Da Vinci Code into her mouth, a twisted final desecration of their literary bond. Joe frames Dr. Nikki for Beck's murder. The novel concludes with Amy Adam appearing at the bookstore, the cycle beginning anew as Joe already imagines their future together. Yu disturbs not just through violence, but by showing how Joe's thought patterns echo familiar romantic narratives pushed to extremes. His digital stalking represents behavior normalized in the social media age, while his justifications mirror possessive dynamics often romanticized in media.